Hello, welcome back to the Grand Slam Tennis Podcast. Tennis commentator Thomas Lorek is back on the pod as we look ahead to the next-gen ATP Finals and get to know this year's diverse field. We discuss this year's new innovation, wearable technology, the continuation of the short set system, and what all of this does for TV audiences. There's a hats off to Ross Hutchins, and if you don't know your Farahs from your Q-bots, catch Thomas's overview of the World Tour Finals doubles lineup, including how Mike Bryan discovered one of his rivals in Slovakia. But first, we talked the draw in Milan, thankfully done in a coffee shop this time. There's a couple of pretty well-established names in there, aren't there? But there are also a few players a lot of fans will not really have heard of or know much about. So in that sense, this tournament has quite a different feel to previous years, doesn't it? It feels like more of a kind of big stage introduction of young talent rather than kind of getting to know players we already know pretty well. So I wanted to ask you, of this field, who do you think is going to surprise and excite audiences? Who do you think we should be looking at who we might not know much about?
I think the French guy, Hugo Humbert, who was a surprise package at Wimbledon this year, fourth round, which is an amazing achievement for a young bloke. The purists of tennis used to say that he is a mixture of Henri Lacombe and Guy Forget. So, yeah, sounds fantastic.
How come? Why did you say that?
Yeah, and because he truly mixes both guys. With Lacombe's fabulous game, I believe not only the sense of humor he collected from Henri Lacombe, because he's a great guy in terms of showmanship, not only a fabulous player, he was a runner-up at the Grand Slam years ago, but and Guy Forget, obviously totally different style to Henri Lacombe, but I think Hugo Humbert is the guy to watch, not only because he left home when he was 12 and he traveled to practice in Paris instead of doing his drills in Metz. But he really has an interesting game. But the other bloke, who is still underrated, I guess, and former ITF world champion, is a great guy called Jamir Kecmanovic from Serbia. He had to travel to a similar way like Kanish Kori years ago. He had to travel from Serbia to Florida with his aunt, because his parents couldn't, someone has to earn the money for a living. So he left his parents in Serbia and he flew to Florida without knowing a word in English. So it's a great story. It's totally contrast to Hugo Humbert, who had the privilege to have a French federation and obviously great coaches around. And also he's a great piano player, which is amazing. Yeah. To be a good piano player. Hugo Humbert, I think thanks to his sister, he's a great musician. And it also makes your mind a bit fresher because of most of the players are they live in the flats, in the rooms, studying our strategies, trying to find a way to do. And
if Humbert is an elegant pianist, I feel like Kecmanovic is a heavy metal guitarist, isn't he? He's a big guy, isn't he, right? And he's I saw him play Baena at Wimbledon, actually, in the first round of Wimbledon, and he beat him fairly comfortably. And he's only 6 foot, isn't he, Kecmanovic? But he's built so wide, isn't he, and so stocky. He's great to watch, isn't he? What can we expect on the court from him? Because I know some people might not have seen him play.
I think Hrabatin, his coach, he was a pretty average player, but he wasn't as successful as Zimonjić, Trojicki, Tipsarević, or Mr. Djokovic. But all the Serbians, they have a special will to win and a fabulous determination to step up the ladder and become a top player, no matter what the conditions are on. Even tougher the way they do, they develop the talents. Kecmanovic is another pure example of how strong you have to be mentally, not only physically, to jump over all the obstacles. And I think, as you mentioned, heavy metal guitarist, he's the one. Like, he can also play very good on the grass courts, not only hard courts, indoors. So Gizmanovic can be a huge threat for all his rivals, no matter what the conditions are. And I believe Allianz Cloud will be even better this year.
And we've had this last-minute replacement. Shapovalov pulled out. We've had Fokina come in, who's a 20-year-old Spanish player. He got the semi-finals in Estoril earlier this year. He's 87 in the world. Tell us what you know about him.
Fantastic. I watched him play, as you mentioned, Estoril in Portuguese, on Portuguese clay this season. He was fantastic to watch with drop shots. You know, he's a very unique player in terms of a new generation. He mixes up, like, he can play very flat balls. He can play a lot of slides, a lot of vertical, a lot of topspin. And he also, the drop shot is fabulous. Even, obviously, clay court is the best surface to do it. But he can do so many successful drop shots on hard court, which is far more tougher to anticipate, to know what kind of pace you're going to play with. So I think Alejandro Davidovich Fokina is the guy, like last year, Jaume Munar, who had a warm word from Rafa Nadal. So I think the Spanish school, maybe they don't produce many talents like years ago with Lopez, Verdasco, Ferrer, Nadal. Now they have two players really on a big scale, on a big stage. Like, I think Alejandro Davidovich Fokina is prepared to play on a really great court. And as you said, there's the biggest platform for the young talents to perform. And I believe he can be a threat even to Alex de Minaur, who I guess is the top hot favorite with 3 times under his belt this season. So Alex de Minaur, with the way Denis Shapovalov retired because of his fatigue, and he can't play this season because of his body require a bit of a rest, which is amazing on the other hand, Finn, because look at this. Last year, Shapovalov also retired from Next Gen, so it made the way to Hubert Hurkacz, Polish top singles player. Hugo Humbert was 9th, and he said, I'm determined to do it this season. That's why he was so focused on qualifying for Next Gen top players. But I think Shapovalov has a different route of philosophy. Like, we have usually former semi-finalist of US Open help him to be a better player, and he won Stockholm this year. So I think Shapovalov is looking at the big picture, which is amazing, because being in his shoes, I would love to use this chance to win it. Possibly because the money is good, which is not so unrealistic. I think both winners, like Tsitsipas last year and Chung 2 years ago, they were both undefeated champions, so you can really have a big prize money and play and adjust yourself and see yourself on the in a rivalry with your generation, not what you normally do when you play far more older players on the ATP Tour or Grand Slams.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, actually.
Maybe he feels he's better now. So I love his game style with his one-handed backhand, but possibly he feels like this is much better to play against Djokovic, like in Bercy last Sunday.
Yeah, well, as you say, it is a good chance to play these players of your generation, isn't it? Because de Minaur, for example, has not played any of the players in his group in an ATP Tour level match. So it is a good chance, isn't it, in a way, to kind of get a bit of a sighter on some of these players and work out how you're going to play them next year, because inevitably they're all going to kick on next year and maybe play each other in on bigger stages, aren't they?
What is amazing, Finn, all 8 players who compete in this season, in this year's Next Gen ATP Finals in Milan, all of them are ranked in top 100, which hasn't happened year before or 2 years ago.
Right, that's surprising. That's surprising, because I looked at this draw, and I must say, I'll just say it actually for listeners who don't know. In Group A, it's Alex de Minaur, then Casper Ruud, then Miomir Kecmanovic, as we've been talking about, and then Alejandro Davidic Fokina as well. And then in Group B, it's Francis Tiafoe, Hugo Humbert, Mikel Emer, and then Yannick Sinner, who we'll speak about in a second, actually. I was looking at that draw and thinking, oh, it's not as strong, maybe, as previous years, where you had Tsitsipas, you had Taylor Fritz, yeah. But maybe I'm wrong. Do you think this is the strongest next gen lineup yet, then?
No, I think the previous years were far stronger, especially with Russians playing. Because, you know, the Russian wave is such a strong, no matter if it's Medvedev who will play the NATO ATP Finals in London, or Khachanov or Rublev. It was Jared Donaldson, American guy who used to play on clay courts in Argentina when he was a teenager. So, yeah, so many great players. But I think, obviously, Felix Auger-Aliassime, he would play 100% if not his left ankle injured in Vienna in practice. But I think sometimes you don't need to have big guns. I know they try to promote the whole year with a big tournament. ATP does a great job, brilliant job for next generation stars, upcoming talents. But sometimes people like Mikhail Imer, for example, who is 288 that time last year, and now he's top 100. So I think that's a chance, and possibly the people can watch the guy who has African roots and play for Sweden. And he's going to be the first, and what's another interesting fact, I think, he's going to be the first Swedish player in singles since Robin Bo Söderling, twice runner-up, Roland Garros, first man to be drafted on clay court, the first Swedish player to finish the season in top 100. So 2011 was last time Swedish guy was that high, like Söderling. So they wait eight years to have a guy in top 100.
Wow, yeah, it's been a long wait. And he's got a brother, in fact, hasn't he, as well, Elias Imer, who's just outside the top 100. So might get two at once, the Swedish tennis fans, which is good. Let's just have a word on Jannik Sinner as well, because he's the youngest man in the draw. He's 18, born in August 2001, which is staggering, isn't it? But he had a good run in Antwerp recently, didn't he? Did you see any of that?
Yes, I've seen. I did his match against Kamil Majkowski.
Right, yeah.
He beat Kamil easily. Then Gael Monfils. He played a fabulous match against Gael Monfils. Straight sets. People used to say or try to explain the thing like Gael was exhausted after Asian swing, but there's no way to say a bad word about Jannik Sinner. Amazing player who used to... Oh, he should have been... Alberto Tombaia, alpine skier. That's what he was brought up as a San Candido man in Tirol. So obviously, I do believe when he was 12, Andreas Seppi, a very experienced player on ATP Tour from Bolzano, because he's only 1 hour drive from Bolzano to hometown of Jannik Sinner. He just noticed his amazing talent, and then that was the way to explain Riccardo Piatti, former Ivan Ljubicic mentor and coach, to see this is the next prospect. He's going to play some interesting tennis. And Jannik Sinner, the way he played in Antwerp, should have been a signpost for anybody. Even Francis Tiafoe should fear of his skill, because Sinner is a very versatile player. Also, he wants to come to the net. He's very precise when doing it. And baseline grand strokes from baseline are second to none, so he's the one to watch.
And we've mentioned that Dimonor should be the favourite, right? He's 18 in the world. He's had a really, really strong year. But do you think, who do you think is going to come out on top between him and Tiafoe if it comes down to those two? Because I feel like they should be comfortable enough, right? Although this format does make it a bit harder to have comfortable matches, doesn't it? So we'll speak about that in a second. But what do you think it is between those two, and who do you think out of those two is looking more impressive right now?
Alex Dimonor, I guess, with the way he played in Zhuhai against Manarino, and the way he played in Basel, especially. Basel was obviously, you cannot expect him to have a fantastic final battle against Federer, but all the other blows he concurred on the way to the final at Swiss Indoors was just really impressive, and he's a very smart guy. I think the best runner, the way he moves from baseline to the net, and also drop volleying, and also lobs, everything, tweeners, it's such a huge prospect. And And I think part of it is because he's experienced enough with three titles under his belt with Sydney, Atlanta. He beat Taylor Fritz in Georgia this year. And Juhai, when you have a when you're so young and you win three titles on the ATP tour, even if it's 250s, you still have a momentum and you still try to start to believe in yourself. And he's very, I should say, humble. Yeah, that even he is very successful. He is top 18 in the world right now. And I can imagine he will be hot favorite. It's the question how he's going to behave being hot favorite. Like last year, everyone expected Tsitsipas to win, and he had a battle in the final against Demiñor. But I think Alex can handle with the pressure pretty well. That's his secret weapon. Like he knows he's been in that area. He played the third round Aussie Open against Nadal, so he knows what's at stake when you play on a big stage. So my money is on Demiñor. If they meet in the final, I would say slightly on Demiñor.
And then a couple of new rules to speak about. Of course, the new rule this year is the introduction of wearable technology. So just bear with me a second. I'll just explain it to listeners. So this is basically going to be a GPS receiver and inertial sensors, apparently, that are going to be put on players. It's going to allow them to, in the ATP's words, quantify the demands of the competition, better understand athlete loading, and make key performance decisions that are supported with objective data. So basically measuring player speed, acceleration, rotation, body orientation. I don't really know what that means, but and it's also going to quantify internal load through heart rate. So this is going to be accessible to each player and to their coaches as well. What do you think about this, Tomas? And I wanted to ask you as well, as a TV broadcaster, are you going to be allowed to integrate this data into your coverage? Are you going to be able to see what the players are seeing?
Yeah, and the good question, Finn. Fabulous one. With the way the tennis is developing and progressing, some Aussie coach, when I was traveling for Aussie Open to cover from Melbourne Park last year, told me that science has not really entered the doorstep of tennis. So I think this is the first step when they bring a lot of new technology, body orientation or rotations, or how many meters the distance you run during the rallies, or which part of do you use more disc cord or red cord, or how strong was the net clearance, how often you come to the net, or your grand slam, your baseline player. So I think it's all new. From the TV broadcasting perspective, it's far more interesting. I'm not a big fan of too much data collecting, because people have too many data today, whether it's no matter what kind of human activity it is. But I think in tennis, it's very knowledgeable, and that can explain a lot of things like the tactics, the strategy, the physical preparation of a player. So in that way, I'm a big fan of it, and I'd love the new fresh light. They can talk to the coaches between when they have the changeovers through the headphones, or they can study the data. Or I like the idea where people can move on in the stands despite behind baseline. So that's a good thing. And plus, the shorter warm up is also a good point. Like, it really breaks the dynamic of the game. Interesting fact, Finn, Matteo Berrettini, when they had the Italian playoffs 2 years ago, a year ago, was below 450, and he lost to Filippo Baldi 2 years ago. Seeing that right now.
Yeah.
He wasn't top eight 2 years ago, or good enough among Italians to qualify for the next gen. Now he's top eight, he's going to play in London. So that's
unbelievable.
In that way, that tournament is bringing some new thing. I think even the way they made the draw, or they selected the groups 2 years ago, even with the Red Bulls and a bit of the hostesses, some purists were against it, but I think you need, because the young people, always the young generation, bring something new, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's sports. So I wouldn't be so strict on them, because that also brings a bit of entertainment into the drawing ceremony. So yeah, in that terms, I think all the data, I know the coaches and players will have the hidden science to not to tell everything to the audience, because that would ruin the strategy or tactical preparation. But in a way, Ross Hutchins as a tournament director with Sergio Palmieri, they do a really good job with showing a new, fresher phase of tennis, like they're bringing the lead rule this year again. So I think few are very traditional, few rules are very modern. So that's a good combination, good mixture.
Well, yeah, the ATP have been very proud in saying that the tournament won a Yahoo Innovation Prize last year for innovation in sport or something. It's certainly been a bold project, hasn't it, the Next Gen Finals, and it's good to see them trying these things. I wanted to ask, with the headsets and the communication with coaches on court, do you think that's something your TV audiences care about? Do you think that's improved the viewer experience?
Mm-hmm. I think people, when they email us or when they tweet or when they bring their own opinions, and I believe they not only tennis diehard fans, they also normal customers, just people who watch sports live on the telly. They were not happy with the way they do it at the WTA tour, when the coach is going down and talks to the lady on specific areas, how to improve the game or whatever strategy, or how to change the footwork or whatever. They love the way they do the things at Next Gen when they can speak through the headsets. Obviously, you cannot open up totally to the world saying everything, but from TV viewers' perspective, it's very knowledgeable and a new one. They want to have more interaction like this between, even more often, I would say, as far as I remember from the posts or from tweets from the public, they would love to see more interaction between the player and the coach. So even if something is totally hidden for them or they don't always understand what's going on, but it brings the new perspective and new format or new way to see, or they try, I think, to appreciate their viewer, original, kind of more extraordinary viewers will know it, but just the normal customer will find out, oh, this is the work. They appreciate far better the efforts from the coaches, because they can see the work the coach does on a regular daily basis, plus the player to be able to analyze it and then convert it to his success. So that's a good thing.
And we were talking about some of the innovations that have been kept or have been dropped since the Next Gen Finals started. The scoring system is going to be the same. For people who don't know, it's short sets to four games, the tiebreak at 3-all, and then you also have no advantages as well. It's sudden death every game. I wonder, do you think this is this just going to remain in the Next Gen Finals, or are we ever going to see this expanded? Because, we're in the third year of the tournament now, not really any sign that this particular rule is going to influence the rest of the sport. Do you think it really works as well?
I think it works. The doubles, we've seen it in Bercy in Paris, when a fabulous player who hasn't played on a tour for 4 years, Filip Polášek from Slovak Republic, is being discovered by Mike Bryan. Mike Bryan had a Slovakian girlfriend. He traveled to Slovakia on holidays, and he saw Filip Polášek playing with kids in little local club Pištěn. He said, you're good enough to play regular on tour. Now he's been in the semi-final of Wimbledon. He's going to play the need to ATP finals with Ivan Dodik. And I think that the doubles system, what they do with the super tiebreaker, top 10 points, that's a magic rule. And I think that's the direction singles also has to go through. I'm a bit amazed and sad in a way that the rules they try to incorporate through the Next Gen Finals in Milan for the third year, they still hasn't opened the door. And that's still, I think, I'm not sure what the problem is, whether it's people are, or the tennis public, tennis audience is so unique in a way that they don't want too many revolutionary moves or too many rule changes. And I think, but traditionalists should do some, you know, research and see the new generation. It's not only to please the young people, but you need to fight for new people into the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rule with no ads is fantastic. It's the same like doubles deciding point when it's used. You get the receiver to choose who's going to return. That's fantastic because it brings the excitement into the game. And I think that, I know they tried to make it shorter, the doubles game. It is dynamic anyway with the natural way the doubles are played. But I think the next gen is still having a problem. Or maybe it's 5 years or even 10 years to convince the purists that you should bring no ad into the game. Andy Roddick, I remember years ago, he said, there's no point to have second serve. That would be fantastic rule. Andy Roddick, former world number one, former US champion, he said. Say bring only one serve, that would bring fantastic. Possibly, I'm not sure. Well, it's good idea. I would love to have it a go at the big events. I think the way they did with the tiebreakers, it's different than every slam. But I think tennis is evolving. But I think the old guard is trying to keep it as it was 50 years ago.
Mm.
Maybe next gen needs. Next 5 years or next 6 years to convince the guys at the top of government or ATP authorities to or ITF authorities to bring it more into Grand Slams. Or I think it needs a bit of a tradition. That's the way. I think that's how people from tennis look at it.
And as you were saying just before I start hit record, actually, you were saying that you reckon that the new rules attract people to the next gen finals, attract your audiences to the next gen finals. You're right. I think ACP bosses need to, and WTA bosses, tennis administrators generally, need to notice that these rules are interesting in themselves and they're going to change viewing habits and draw bigger audiences, maybe, aren't they? Because people don't have time to sit down to even a long best of three set match. Do they? Because that could be 2.5 hours. Like, people don't have time and they don't want to either a lot of the time unless you're a big tennis fan.
Look at this. Men's doubles final at Wimbledon this year. Fantastic. I'm a big fan of doubles. I love to come and to do country on it. I love to watch it just for my own pleasure. But I know for the ordinary viewer, 5 hours, even if it's such a beautiful spectacle like it was between Cabal, Farah against Mayu, Roger Baslan, this was the best. I can imagine maybe De Bruyne against Pospisil Sock 5 years ago at Wimbledon was also a fantastic, magical final. But for the normal guy who sits on a sofa, as you said, 5 hours in front of a TV set, it's just, you can't go that way. So you need, I'm not a big fan of a huge revolution, but the way they do it with a towel rack as well, possibly it's a nice innovation. I wouldn't say every single tournament, but that's another good point. Like they try to incorporate. So Ross Hutchins, hats off. No matter if it's tennis or any other sport thing, we not always appreciate the people who are courageous enough to bring new things, new ideas. Mm-hmm. I think you need to say a big thank you to the guys. Maybe, I know sometimes they can feel frustrated why the world don't understand us, but that's the way it is, unfortunately. You need to spend a few years making people's brains working in different modes.
Mm. We should just say as well, there's video reviews also happen at the next gen finals. So that's for like double bounces, net touches, encroachment onto the other side of the court. And as we know, that's worked a charm in football. at the minute in the UK, we're in the throes of a video assistant referee crisis. Hopefully the next gen finals will show a better way of officiating with video technology. But you mentioned there about doubles, Tomáš. Just before we start recording, you were saying that Polshchat TV are going to cover every single doubles match of the next gen finals, right? So I don't know, tell us a bit about that. What are you looking forward to? I know it's next week, but It should be exciting finals, shouldn't it?
Yeah, the way I think there's so many characters, there's still a lot of work to be done to promote top doubles players worldwide, because they're fantastic people off playing. Bruno Fracasso-Aros, he doesn't play this year in London because he stopped playing with Jamie and he plays with Mate Pavic, a lefty from Croatia, a great player from Croatia. But I think they have such a, like, Raven Klaassen is a fantastic personality. When you talk to him for half an hour during the Grand Slam after the match, he's like an open book. You don't want to stop reading. You try to explore every single second. They're very nice guys. Interesting for also not for a diehard tennis fan, but also for the guy aside, like as you know, Sarah's story of Iraq and everything is just not only his wonderful lobs on court with Jamie Murray in the past, but and his Grand Slam titles or mixed doubles titles. But I think, the doubles, Mai and Herbert, the reunion after Herbert decided to play singles, be a top singles player. I think the French guys will be a threat for everybody. Cabal Farah, this is just fabulous what they showed us this year, both at Wimbledon and US Open. First ever Colombians to win Grand Slam titles. Lukas Kubot and Marcelo Melo. Even Lukas has started the season with another guy who doesn't have the exposure that yes, you should get it. Horacio Ceballos from Argentina, from Mar del Plata on the Atlantic coast. He's a fantastic lefty doubles player. The way he played Indian Wells this year was fantastic with Mekic. So then you go Raven Klaas and Michael Venus, you get Germans, Kevin. Welcome back to the Grand Slam Tennis Podcast. Tennis commentator Tomáš Lorek is back on the pod as we look ahead to the next-gen ATP Finals and get to know this year's diverse field. We discuss this year's new innovation, wearable technology, the continuation of the short set system, and what all of this does for TV audiences. There's a hats off to Roch Hutchinson. Oh, fuck's sake.